Floods are unfortunately too common in the hills and hollers of Appalachia. As heavy rainfall and the massive floods that followed this spring and summer in Buchanan County, Virginia, and eastern Kentucky prove. Today we're going to tell the story of a sudden flash flood that struck the town of Saltville, Virginia, nearly 100 years ago this coming Christmas Eve, leaving a mountain of alkali sludge in its wake. Hello folks, I'm Steve Gilley, along with Rod Mullins, and this is Stories, a History of Appalachia.
Well, Steve, you kind of stole my thunder on that one. I was getting ready to introduce it. I was going to say this wasn't just any typical flood that roared through Saltville back there in that time frame. But I'm telling you, it was one that was bad. And I mean really bad when it roared through.
And it was not rain. It was muck. I mean, muck. That's just
it. Terrible.
Muck.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't know about Saltville, it's a very historic place, not just in Appalachia, but in America as well. Saltville, as you can guess, got its name from vast salt deposits located there. In fact, this huge reservoir of salt was used by Native Americans for thousands of years to preserve game and flavor food. And when Spanish explorers arrived in the Appalachian region in the 16th century, those conquistadors discovered those salt deposits. Later pioneers to Appalachia used them, and the Union and the Confederacy battled each other fiercely for control of the area and its precious salt during the Civil War. Saltville was a very important place, but Rod, there was more than salt there, wasn't there?
Yes, indeed, Steve. And also found in the Saltville area and around Saltville were the alkali deposits, which were mined and processed over the years. In 1893, the Matheson Alkali Works began operations and producing soda ash, baking soda, caustic soda, and other alkaline products. This process was highly profitable, but it was a bit messy, producing toxic waste in the form of highly alkaline muck. Well, that muck had to be put somewhere safe so as not to harm the people who lived in the town. Well, they came up with this idea of a quote-unquote muck dam to hold back the alkali waste. When it was finished, the dam held back a toxic lake holding 30 acres of sludge, which was made of slacker waste and fly ash mixed with cinders from the boilers that produce steam at the plant. And Steve, this is very much like what you would consider the sludge ponds, the slate ponds, and so forth, at a lot of the mining operations around Southwest Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, and Southern West Virginia. And yeah, we talk about that incident that happened in what, 1972, I think, up in West Virginia? Buffalo Creek. This is like the recipe for a disaster, and that's what's going to happen.
Well, what the company did there in Saltville, it wasn't anything to do with coal. It was to mine the limestone in the area, burn it and break it down into lime, then slake it to make hydrated lime so that soda ash could be made. The mixture inside the muck dam was an ammonia still waste, a slurry made of solid particles and alkaline quote-unquote liquor that was pumped out into the pond. The solid settled out and the liquor, which was mainly water, was drained into the river, a process for which the plant had a permit. Now, this plant employed a lot of people. In fact, it made the town of Saltville a prosperous place to live. And the living was good in Saltville and the surrounding area until the unthinkable happened on Christmas Eve, 1924. Now, that Christmas Eve was cold and rainy, but the folks in Saltville were preparing for another great Christmas Day. There were parties planned, church services, Christmas plays, and festivities scheduled all around the area. Then, in the little community of Palmertown, up the Holston River, closer to that muck dam, an explosion was heard. And hell was unleashed on the folks living along the Holston River down to Saltville.
Well, what had happened? The muck dam had broke, unleashing a torrent of alkaline muck and sludge into the Holston River from the 300-foot-wide hole that now existed in the dam. J.H. Scott lived on a hill across the river from the break in the dam, and according to The Great Saltville Disaster, a booklet published soon after the event, Scott thought he heard an explosion. He and his brother went to a door where they saw mountains moving by. The muck knocked Scott through the house and about 50 feet into the yard. His brother was killed. Another resident who lived up on Chinch Row heard a, quote, deep roaring sound like the purring of 100 automobile engines, end quote. He thought it was a storm until he saw the river filled with white waves. He got his family through the muck, then helped five neighbors to safety. Workers from the plant came down and set a wrecked house on fire to light the rescue efforts. The house drifted into two others and set them alight as well.
Soon, a raging torrent of water and toxic muck 100 feet high and 300 feet wide made its way down to Saltville, bringing death and destruction with it. Houses were swept away, taking other houses as they came down the Holston and leaving toxic sludge everywhere. Reports in the newspapers the next day told of at least 10 houses demolished and the fertile bottomlands of the Holston River covered in sludge for at least 6 miles downstream. Many were missing, and it was feared that they were trapped in their houses and swept out into the Holston and unable to escape. According to the manager of the Matheson Alkali Works, a Mr. Sandlin, 85 people had been injured and were suffering from exposure, and that 35 of those were sent to a makeshift hospital set up above a drugstore in downtown Saltville. On the 26th, 6 were known dead, and 1 body was identified, that of Mrs. Harry Trader, who lived in the first house below the dam. But, Rod, they would not be the last.
No, they wouldn't, Steve, because by the 27th, there were more dead reported, 14 by that point, and another problem began popping up. Rescuers, over 200 of them, began reporting sore eyes and burns on their skin, both caused by exposure to the alkaline sludge all around them. But they continued to work, trying to find survivors. The first of the funerals were held on the 28th, and 19 were now being reported as have died. 8 were still missing. One of the dead was Mrs. Ninny Jackson, who was reported to be visiting her daughter in the area when the dam burst. She was found in her daughter's yard, standing straight up with her hands over her face as she was buried alive in the muck. Her entire family perished that day. But there were also heroic and positive stories as well. Robert Fuller, his wife, and their 8-month-old child, along with Mrs. Fuller's younger brother and sister, were in the Fuller home when the wall of water and muck hit. They all managed to climb onto a 16-foot log timber and float out of the doorway into the raging waters outside. All of this in the dark. Mrs. Fuller, baby in one arm, managed to grab a hold of a stout tree limb as they passed and stopped the timber from going on downstream. Mr. Fuller jumped off the timber and, finding that he could just touch bottom, grabbed his 15-year-old sister-in-law and carried her to shore through the muck up to his chin. Someone on the shore heard the commotion in the water and then waded in to pull the others to safety.
Another heroic tale was that of the rescue of the Prater girls. The dam burst killed their parents and sent the remains of their house rushing downstream. 3 men, Wyndham Roberts, John Helton, and Dave Hicks, were passing that wreckage when they heard a child calling for its mother. They determined that the voice was coming from inside the roof of a passing house, so they jumped in and tore a hole in the roof. A small hand came through the hole, and little girl said, and I quote here, "Please don't kill us. My little sister is here in bed with me. Mama and Papa are downstairs, and we've been calling for them all night, but they won't answer us," end quote. The men reassured the girls, then pulled them out and got them to safety. When the house came to rest in the muck, the parents were found still in bed, with the bed resting on the muck and pressing up against the roof rafter.
Wow. 19 people altogether died in the disaster. They included Charles Emery Clear, age 5, Opal Jane Polly, age 10, James C. Scott, age 72, Christina Walk, age 8 months, Laura B. Walk, age 7, Lonnie M. Walk, age 10, Ida Lee Stout, age 24, Mary Luella Stout, age 4, Roy Leistout, age 1. Hazel Jackson, age 2. Maxie Jackson, age 18. Nanny Jackson, age 45. Bessie G. Prater, age 10 months. Hiawatha Prater, age 25. J.D. Prater, age 49. Junior Prater, age 1. Leota Prater, age 19. Leslie Prater, age 3. And Mamie Prater, age 36.
After the disaster, all efforts focused on the cause. With the reports of an explosion at the dam, investigators began trying to find out if maybe someone intentionally blew it up. And suspicions fell on a 27-year-old man who had been denied a job at the Matheson Alkali Works, Roy Patrick. According to reports in the January 19, 1925 edition of the Kingsport Times, the police arrested Patrick on suspicion of setting off dynamite at the dam after making threats against the company because they wouldn't hire him. Due to threats of a lynching, the authorities relocated him to the jail in nearby Marion. Now, Patrick denied that he had anything to do with the dam break, saying it was people who had it in for him who lied when they said he was going to do something to the alkali works. After a month in jail, the grand jury decided not to indict Patrick due to lack of evidence, and he was set free. And Rod, to this day, nobody knows what happened that night, although there is speculation that someone else set off dynamite or that there was a natural gas explosion. Some people even think maybe there was a minor earthquake.
Wow. That would be different, you know, for something like this to happen. But wow, a minor earthquake to set all that stuff off. But it's entirely possible. Can't say that it wouldn't happen, but it's entirely possible. Well, all that alkaline waste caused a major fish kill down the Holston River to its juncture with the French Broad at Knoxville, causing the Tennessee government to restock the river at Knoxville with minnows, rainbow trout, bass, and other species from the government hatchery located near Irwin, Tennessee, in April. You know, if the media had been in place at that time when something like this happened, I think they would even be even more shocked at the destruction and so forth. This is not just any kind of typical flood. This was one of those things that just, I don't know, it just happened out of nowhere, caught everybody off guard, and especially on the night before the major holiday of the season, before Christmas. It's terrible. Any way you look at it, just a terrible event that took place.
And folks, that's the story of the Saltville Christmas Eve flood. Another bit of the history of this place we call home. Thanks for listening. Now, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to the Stories Podcast, which you can do at Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Audible, Good Pods, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or on your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening, folks. Till next we meet, y'all take care. So long, everybody.